distinction is the body. The consciousness is the same in all living beings. But the bodily machinery limits the way in which that consciousness can be
manifest.
Right.
You know, like I guess if the consciousness is all from the one.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at it, a stupid person and a smart person, they both have the same innate quality of consciousness, but the machinery is different.
But as humans, we have the capacity to be self-aware.
Yeah.
Which I don't really know scientifically you could prove in the animal or plant world, especially.
Their scope for consciousness is limited. Consciousness is there, but the scope for its use, for its application, is limited.
So you think that trees could be self-aware if they had they don't have a central nervous system, they don't even have a
curve. The nature of their embodiment.
Yeah, I just see like there's like certain biological factors that are.
I mean, take a drunkard, take a guy who's dead drunk. He's a conscious living being. But his capacity for self-awareness is severely limited.
I don't think that follows. Because once he becomes undrunk, sober...
But in that particular situation, his capacity for self-awareness is curtailed. So trees and plants and so on are permanently in such a situation, as long as they're in that embodiment.
But they are, in fact, incapable of ever having that. Not
forever, but while they're in that body, they can be promoted.
Okay, then in an animal body, I don't know if like say chickens have the capacity for the self-awareness that humans have.
No.
And so it's the same soul or.
Yep.
Whatever.
In all forms of life.
In all forms of life. So then. So I guess the cruelty is on principle to that form of life, whether or not they experience it the same way as we would.
Not just that, but actually our principle is that we offer all food to Krishna. And in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, please offer me fruits, flowers, leaves, water, no vegetarian food. If Krishna said, please offer me steak, we'd do that. But Krishna's very kind. He says, just these things.
Yeah, I guess I struggle with that whole distinction between animal and human consciousness.
The same, the animal has, there's a different, the animal has consciousness, but it's limited to, we're thinking about, we could be thinking about philosophy. The animal's thinking about where's food, where's food, where's food, where's food. Of course, a lot of human beings are the same way, they're just thinking about where's food, where's sex. Yeah, so they're practically animals themselves.
But then again, they have the capacity for the self-awareness.
But since they're not using it, they might as well be animals.
Well, the fact that they're not using it or not, that doesn't really matter so much as if they have the capacity.
They have it, but unused capacity. If I have the capacity to be kind and I don't use it, then I might as well not be kind. You might as well be cruel. Say a person has the capacity to study, or the person has the capacity to earn money, or the person has the capacity, but he's not earning money, he's not studying, and what's the use?
Well, the fact that they could.
But it's a theoretical something or other, but since he's not using it, he could be responsible, he could achieve a lot, he could be a good husband, he could be, but since he's not, it's only a a theoretical potential.
But the theoretical potential doesn't exist in animals.
Right, exactly.
So a human being...
He has the potential to be spiritually inquisitive. If he doesn't use it, he's considered to be like an animal.
Or even, I would say even self-aware. To put a moral, like a moral whatever on their actions.
No, even animals have that to a certain extent. There's research on it. They have their values also, and even what you can call moral standards they found in.
I guess like a lot of like say lions don't eat lion carcasses.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They have their social rules and their mores. But
those are more ingrained by instinct than by conscious thought.
What we finally say is that the human beings have the capacity for spiritual inquiry. That's the crucial point. That's the crucial point.
I would sort of say that in that there is a distinction between maybe not the value of the soul within the body, but maybe then the body itself.
Absolutely. The human body is the valuable one. Because it gives us that opportunity. The Vedic literature says that we travel through all these different species of life, and now we've got this opportunity. Now we've got this body, which gives us the chance for spiritual inquiry.
It also gives us the chance to eat meat.
Yeah, that means I can use it, having this human body, I can use it for spiritual inquiry, or I can use it for what the animals use their bodies for, eating, sleeping, fighting, and having sex. You know, it's up to me. If I don't see a higher purpose, that's my misfortune.
So I guess it's a matter of just coming to terms and with that higher purpose.
That's what human life is meant for.
So you can give in to your very animal basic instincts.
You can.
Or you can sort of turn to the spiritual inquiry. So is there a middle ground between spiritual inquiry and enjoying a good hamburger every once in a while?
Yeah, there are ways to regulate the senses in such a way that I can eat, I can sleep, I can have sex, everything. And it'll still be congruent with spiritual progress.
So the one thing I really like is say on a very local farm, you raise the animals, you treat them well, you thank them for their existence, and then you kill them humanely, and then you eat them.
Not really necessary to do that.
Well, it's not necessary, but I guess
why cause them trouble that way?
Well, I don't want to get into like the nitty picky details of that.
In our Vedic culture, we take a more humane approach. That there's no, you know, if I kill you humanely, you won't thank me a whole lot. Thanks for that, you know, you didn't torture me before you killed me. It's that's kind of a small consolation prize. I'd rather you not kill me.
And then so all that then goes out the window when the need is there. So if you have the choice, then you should live and eat in sort of like with deference to...
Come to some of our programs and eat with us. We knock all the meat eating stuff out of the ballpark. We have so much good stuff.
Oh, yeah?
You would not have been able to imagine.
Do you have one in the D.C. area?
Yeah. Let's see what we've got here. Yeah. This is our address in Potomac.
Cool. And so I could go there.
Yeah, definitely. We have regular classes every day, but this is our Sunday program, which a lot of people come to. Uh-huh. And I'm going to give you the
names of two people there.
There's a pen in there, and there's some paper.
Because I've stopped eating red meat.
Uh huh.
And I eat it once in a while, but for the more practical reasons that it's just a tremendous waste of energy.
Yeah.
And it's really bad for the environment.
We will show you how you can really eat.
Yeah?
We'll show you eating as it's meant to be.
And what's your name?
My name's Jai Adwait Swami. There's a little box with cards in there. There's a box, a little plastic box with cards. What's your name?
Everett.
Everett. This name, Gorabani, he's the guy who's leading the chanting right now. He's from around here. And Anutama and his wife, Yukini. There are very known people there. They're kind of head things up. I'll give you my name. No, just my personal cards in there, too. Okay, now we've got everything.